You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market reminds you that every bite has a story. So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates. And now from Whole Foods, delicious tweets. See instant sales alerts, enter contests, find answers, and get cooking. Follow Whole Foods Market on Twitter at Whole Foods NYC. That's Whole Foods NYC. Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and you're listening to the show live. Well, hopefully you're listening live tonight on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. So I've been doing a few shows lately where I've been kind of getting into talking about what foods I like the most and what foods I like the least or dislike the most. The things that, like, I've always thought I liked all along, but now I'm finding less interest in. Foods that I kind of always assumed I liked, but don't. Maybe I don't like them that much. Or maybe it's not that I don't like them. I just don't eat them that much anymore. Like pasta. I don't really eat much pasta. Smoked salmon. Smoked salmon is one of those things you think, oh, I love smoked salmon. Eh, it's all right. I know it's kind of hard to believe, but I don't know what's happening to me. I'm just losing. You know, like you're a little kid and you start out and you're sort of tentative and you don't think you like things. And then you learn that you do like them and then you like them. And then maybe as you get older, you suddenly go, well, wait a minute, maybe I don't like them. Anyway, I think part of it for me, or a lot of it, has to do with having a job where I'm completely immersed and surrounded by food all day. I'm an instructor at a culinary school, and I teach all day, and I have to taste food all day, and I'm surrounded by it. So that by the end of the day, really nothing is appealing or tempting me. It's like antabuse, you know, antabuse for alcoholics. Like if they taste alcohol, it makes them throw up. It's sort of like antabuse for food people, or for food addicts. It makes you kind of not want to eat anything, being surrounded by it all day. It's actually very good for resolving any food issues you may have. So I'm surrounded by it all day, and I'm surrounded by people cooking and students wanting me and needing me to taste their food all day. So it's got like desensitivity properties to it. It makes you not want it anymore. And I wonder if people who work with other things have the same problem. Like people who work with wine, someone who sells wine or is a sommelier or wine rep, they taste wine all day. They talk about wine all day. So when they go home at night, do they drink beer? Are they just full of wine and drink beer? Or do they go home and drink wine? I don't know. I was thinking about this. I knew somebody growing up who was the child of two psychologists. And they themselves were pretty screwed up. They were a pretty effed up kid. And, you know, did the parents get so tired during the day of figuring out other people's emotional issues? And so by day, they did it. So at night, they, like, you know, left their kids alone, maybe watching Gilligan's Island reruns by themselves, trying to figure out their own issues. I don't know. But I think I'm suffering from overexposure or something. And since I'm kind of small and prone to what my niece used to call roundiness, you know, being a little curvy, I have to be careful about my caloric intake every day because, you know, if I have to taste a spoonful or two of 16 risottos or 16 bechamel sauces during a class at work, then I'm already in for like an extra, you know, 300-400 calories a day. So part of it is that I have to just be careful about what I eat. So when I go home, or I do get to eat a meal outside of work, or I'm cooking for myself, what I try to do is really tune in to my brain and my gut. And I ask them, brain and gut, what do you really feel like eating today? I try to sort of stop and say, what do we really feel like eating today? And brain and gut, well, housed in the same condo, are kind of like frenemies. You know, they don't always agree. A lot of it, I think, has to do with my brain's mood, if I got enough sleep. You know, gut is more primal. more immediate, more about just filling it up. Brain is more about the emotional state. There's a lot going on. So I ask them and they tell me and I try to listen. And mostly they're right. I found that if you just kind of ask your body what you want to eat, it'll tell you, you know, who am I to argue with my own brain and my own gut? So I try to listen to them. And so on any given day, if I ask them that, their answers might be something like this. Kale, yogurt, lamb, apples, blackberries, maybe Vietnamese food, sushi, spinach, prosciutto, yogurt, anything Greek, red chard, beans, yogurt, big salad. That would sort of be their answer. All very healthy, you know, good options. But did you see a pattern in there? Did you notice what kept repeating? You know, brain and gut, they're pretty good eaters. They have the same idea. They have a lot of vegetables, fruit, not much meat. But did you see the yogurt in there? That came up a lot. If I stop and go, what do we want to eat today? Usually the body says, yogurt. It came up 3 times in one Q&A session with the brain and the gut. And so it's yogurt's become sort of like my default food. It's like when I can't think of anything else I want yogurt. Which is crazy because when I was a little kid, it was one of the few foods that I absolutely refused to eat. And I hated it. I hated anything that was like tangy like that. I hated yogurt. I didn't really like pickles. Now I'm all about the fermentation. I love everything like that, but now I can't get enough of it. But it can't just be any old crappy supermarket yogurt, you know, no sugary, sweet, fruity yogurt. It has to be good yogurt. It has to be Greek yogurt, preferably, or even sheep or goat's milk yogurt. And ideally, Trader Joe's non-fat Greek plain yogurt to me is the best, drizzled with a little buckwheat honey over it, local. New York honey. The other Greek yogurt, Faye, that's good too. It's pronounced Faye, by the way. But Trader Joe beats it out on price. Trader Joe's Greek yogurt is a great deal. And it's just as good. And I could go through 2 full pints of it a day. If I allowed myself that luxurious gluttony, I could wallow in Trader Joe's yogurt all day. Now, of course, you're saying, but Chef Erica, you, of all people, who preaches the homemade and handmade, shouldn't you be making your own yogurt? You know how easy it is, and then you wouldn't be throwing out all those plastic containers, right? Well, first of all, I save those plastic containers, and I use them to store other stuff, so there. And yes, I have made my own yogurt, and it's ridiculously easy, and it comes out really good, and I honestly have no idea why I have not been making my own yogurt lately or why I stopped. It just kind of happened. It's really easy to do, and I'm going to get to that later on in the show, how to actually make your own yogurt. But today we're talking about, well, we'll talk about that later on too. But when it comes down to yogurt, the one food I turn to when I'm hungry and indecisive, when my brain and my gut are getting along or battling it out, when it's like the default when I need a snack after I go on a long run late at night. If I can't figure out what else to eat, I'm going to eat yogurt. We are going to take a very short break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the history of my favorite food. We'll be right back.
Take this love I have, it's part of me. It won't ever go away. Let's be together for the rest of time. Forever from this day. Now I feel good inside, you're part of me. Won't you ever go away? I've never thought of loving you, I'm mine. Each and every time I pray, we've got the strength we need to carry on. And boy, I'm riding on a cloud. I want the world to know the way you make me.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. you might be listening to this show live right now, every Tuesday night at 6:30. If not, you can also podcast these shows on iTunes. You can also listen to any show archived 24 hours a day on Heritage Radio Network. We are also now streaming 24 hours a day, so there's always something to listen to. And if you're a fan of Why We Cook or would like to become a fan of this show, Why We Cook, you can visit me on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, and you can become a fan. Send me a message, leave a comment, whatever you would like to do. You can also leave comments on the heritageradionetwork.com website. I know it's a lot of choices. So tonight on Why We Cook, I've been talking about the food I turn to when nothing else will do or when I can't figure out what I want to eat. Because of my job, I'm an instructor at a culinary school. I'm immersed in food all day. I'm surrounded by it. And sometimes by the end of the day, there's just nothing that I want to eat. There's just nothing that interests me or appeals to me. I'm sick of it. Like today, I had to taste, well, there were only 12 students today, but so 12 hanger steaks, 12 grilled mackerels, 12 burgers, and 3 batches of buffalo chili. And I don't even eat that much meat, so I'm feeling a little logy. So usually what I turn to when I'm in that situation is yogurt. I have a little conference with my brain and my gut, and I say, what do you want to eat? And they all scream, yogurt. So that's what I eat. So yogurt's a really old food. It's one of the oldest foods made by humans that we know about. It's really one of the first processed foods. It's been around for a long time. There's evidence of cultured milk products being produced almost 5,000 years ago. Really long time. It probably comes from, well, most likely comes from what's now Eastern Europe and Western Central Asia. So Eastern Europe, the Eastern Mediterranean, Central Asia, Western Asia, you know what I'm talking about? Basically Turkey, Bulgaria, Romania, places like that, where nomadic cattle herders lived 5,000 years ago. And, you know, some cow herd, they're not shepherds, they're cow herds. Some cow herd, you know, had some milk one day and probably left it sitting out in a cave by mistake overnight on a warm evening. And the wild bacteria that lived in the cave got into it and thickened it. It's just like making cheese, but with yogurt, you stop before it becomes cheese. So the bacteria get into there and they start to thicken the milk, and that's what the earliest yogurt was. The earliest yogurts were probably spontaneously fermented by wild bacteria called Lactobacillus bulgaricus. And they're bacteria that are named after, obviously, what is now Bulgaria. Not probably Bulgaria. And there are like a million different variations on yogurt and yogurt drinks and different types of yogurt all over the world, but particularly in that Eastern Europe, Central Western Asia, North Africa, Central Europe, anywhere that has dairy, they've figured out all these ways of preserving their milk and turning it into these various forms of yogurt, or yogurt on its way to being cheese. Because, of course, one of my favorite themes is, what did people do with their food before refrigeration? Before refrigeration, people had to figure out ways to preserve it. And fermentation by bacteria was probably a happy accident that was conveniently discovered. And it resulted in food that was actually better tasting and more nutritious and safer to eat. So it was a bonus for everybody, because anytime you ferment a food, of course, you make it more nutritious, because the fermentation process creates B vitamins that you would only otherwise get in meat. And in nomadic shepherding and cow herding cultures, people didn't actually eat that much meat because the animals were more valuable to them, you know, for producing and for grazing. So, excuse me, so maybe they needed to get their B vitamins from other sources, and they would get it from fermented foods. It's like in Japan, where historically people didn't eat red meat. They didn't actually eat red meat in Japan until the Europeans brought it in the 17th, 18th century. So they had to get their B vitamins somehow, and they got it from other fermented foods like miso. Miso is kind of like Japan's answer to yogurt, sort of the same concept. So that's how they got their bees. But anyway, so, you know, these dairy herding nomads, they were out there with all their milk and they had to find ways to preserve it. And they figured it out pretty quickly that if they just let the milk sit out, the natural bacteria would thicken it. Then they figured out that if they let it thicken and then maybe they put it into a container made out of like a animal stomach, it would turn into cheese. So that was good. But when you're shopping for your yogurt, because you're not a nomadic cowherd, what you want to look for is purity. You want a yogurt that's just milk and cultures. There's a lot of crap out there. A lot of commercial yogurt is full of gelatins and pectin and cornstarch and all these other thickeners that are there to compensate for fat, especially, you know, if you buy low-fat or non-fat yogurt, they put that in to compensate for fat, you know, and not to mention like all the sugar and the artificial coloring and the NutraSweet and just there's so much garbage in there. I mean, people need to realize that yogurt is just milk and culture. It shouldn't be pink. It shouldn't have weird, you know, fruit chunks in it. And the mere fact of the existence of a yogurt that is made by or branded by Trix cereal actually makes me want to form a militia and go on a rampage, because that should not exist. And people, of course, are buying it thinking, oh, I'm feeding my child yogurt. But really what you're just feeding your child is goo, sugary goo. It has nothing to do with real yogurt. So, you know, good quality plain yogurt nutritionally is like, you know, the superfood full of protein, calcium, those B vitamins I was talking about. And it has nutritional benefits that go beyond milk, unfermented milk. So, like I was talking about with those vitamins. And also, people who are moderately lactose intolerant can eat yogurt without side effects. Because in the process of making yogurt, you turn the lactose, which is milk sugar, into lactic acid by the bacterial culture. So, it's kind of like the culture does the digestion for you. Since if you're lactose intolerant, you're lacking that enzyme that turns the lactose into lactic acid, but those bacteria kind of do it for you. So the yogurt becomes digestible for you. And if you have a digestion kind of breakdown, like on the other end, yogurt's actually really good for that too. It actually helps to prevent diarrhea. So if you're traveling somewhere and your stomach gets a little messed up, it's good to eat it. Especially if you wind up taking antibiotics. If you take antibiotics, they're going to wipe out all the intestinal flora and fauna, and you need to replace those. So if you eat probiotics, that's what yogurt is, you can replace those good little bugs in there. And some studies even claim that eating yogurt is really good for your gums, because the probiotic effect of the lactic acid is supposed to be very good for your gums. So who knows? Maybe you could rub it on there like toothpaste instead. And if you want to sort of get into the, you know, the religious side of things, in India, they're big on drinking lassi. I'm sure you've had a lassi. If you've had Indian food, it's a drink. It's drinkable yogurt, like kefir. A lot of cultures do drinkable yogurt. And when you drink a lassi in India, you're actually paying your respects to Krishna. Krishna, you know, is the god, one of the most revered gods, Hindu gods in India. Krishna was a big dairy fan. He was a cowherd also, and he loved his yogurt and his cheese and his paneer and his cream. So if you eat yogurt in India, you're giving props to Krishna. You're paying your respect. And that really can't hurt, you know, in the great karmic circle of life. It doesn't hurt to pay respects to Krishna, even if you're not Hindu. So how is it made? How do you make yogurt? Well, like, you know, other fermented milk products, it's just milk and bacteria. Fermentation of lactose, which is milk sugar, makes lactic acid, which then acts on the milk proteins to thicken up the yogurt and give it its characteristic tangy flavor. We're going to take another quick break here. When we come back, we're going to get much more into how yogurt is made and how you can make your very own yogurt at home. We'll be right back.
Come in. as I commence, the crowd starts to sway, doing my thing. On another level, we unique three, dropping in technical, rocking the rhythm with perfect timing. As you can see, right now I'm in a state of mind that'll shock and blind, combined with the rhythm inside. And we unique in the place to be, unique, and watch us break it down.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So we're talking about yogurt and how it's made. And I just started to get into how it's made in the last segment, but let's review. You take milk, just nice fresh milk from any mammal, any milk-producing animal. You add bacteria to it. You let it sit. You have yogurt. That's how you make it. But you want to use specific bacteria, not just any bacteria. So yogurt is produced by using bacterial cultures, and they are called Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus. I love the way those sound. If I had kids, that's what I'd name them. Bulgaricus and Thermophilus. But the first step before you add those critters to the milk is that you want to heat up the milk. This is important because the milk has to be heated to 180 degrees. You have to remember that originally yogurt was made from raw milk. And if you didn't control which bacteria came to the party, you could have kind of bacterial anarchy going on, and you could have all kinds of crazy things growing in there, and you didn't want to do that. So you want to control what happens. You want to be very selective about which bacteria get past that velvet rope. So you heat it up to 180. That's going to kill off a lot of the bacteria that's in the milk, even though you're using pasteurized milk. The heating process also changes the milk proteins. It begins to coagulate those milk proteins, and that's going to be very important when you're making yogurt, because you want your yogurt to set into a gel rather than separate into curds. If we were making cheese, we would want it to separate into curds, but we actually want it to set into a sliceable gel, which is what yogurt actually is. So you heat it up to 180, then you cool it down to about 110. And at 110, you add the bacteria, the culture, and you maintain that temperature, or around 100 degrees, 4 to 7 hours. That will give you a soft set yogurt. After that, you can put it in the fridge. It'll firm up. But maybe you're saying, okay, I want to do that, but where do I get those bacteria? How do I get them? Do I just capture them from the air? Do I have to go to Bulgaria? No. You make yogurt from yogurt. It's sort of like sourdough starter. If you've ever made sourdough, you make a starter. You mix water and flour, and you let it sit out, and you actually catch wild bacteria in it, and they start to develop that sourdough culture. And then you take some of that sourdough culture and you put it into your bread dough, and it leavens your bread dough, and that's how you make sourdough. But before you bake that bread, you remember to save a piece of that dough and use that to start your next dough. So it's the same thing with yogurt. You always start your next batch with some of your last batch. So you make your yogurt, you save some of it, and you add it to your new yogurt. But that's kind of like a chicken and the egg thing, because what if you don't have a batch of yogurt to save some to start your next batch? Well, that's where you go to the store. You go to Trader Joe's and you buy some of their delicious Greek yogurt, or you can actually buy yogurt culture, powdered yogurt, dehydrated culture. And usually you can get that online from cheesemaking stores, or homebrew stores sell that kind of stuff because they're selling all sorts of yeast and bacterial products anyway. Or just buy some good quality plain yogurt and use that. Don't use Trix yogurt. That's not a good culture starter. Okay, Trix yogurt won't work. And but if you do buy the yogurt, the Greek yogurt really has the best culture. You know, the Greeks, it's one of the oldest cultures. They invented culture. So use Greek yogurt. And when I was a little kid in our house, we actually had this yogurt maker. It was made by Salton, and my parents bought it and used it, and they made their own yogurt for a while. And as I mentioned earlier, I hated yogurt. When I was a kid, I couldn't stand it. And my parents even tried to make a chocolate yogurt for me to get me to eat it. And so we poured Hershey's chocolate syrup into it and stirred it in to get me to eat it. But by the time it had enough chocolate in it, it was like an inverse ratio, and it was like yogurt flavored chocolate. And I still wouldn't eat it, but now I love it. But this machine had like these little individual glass jars, and they sat in like a heated base. And I think you can still find them. I've seen them in stores, and you can buy that, but you don't really need it. You can just use little glass jars, or you can even use like a wide, shallow glass bowl, like a Pyrex kind of bowl with a lid. And actually, the more surface area you have, the better your gel will actually set up. So if you use like a wide, shallow bowl, it's better than using like a bucket. So get your milk, you know, get good, organic, high quality milk. Pasteurized milk is fine. If you can find raw milk, that's great, but you're going to be cooking it anyway, so that means you're pasteurizing it. So get your milk, heat up your milk to 180, use a thermometer, don't just guess, cool it down to 110, and then add your starter. So your starter, if you're using powdered starter, 2 tablespoons per quart of milk. Okay, that's if you're using yogurt or if you're using powdered starter. 2 tablespoons of yogurt starter per quart of milk. Now, if you're going to make non-fat yogurt, you might want to give it a little more body. So what you do is you get some non-fat dry milk powder. Remember that stuff? Powdered milk, like in the Depression, if you remember the Depression. And you can add some powdered milk to the mixture, and that'll give the non-fat yogurt a little bit more thickness and body. Put it into the jars, cover it, and you want to keep it right around 100 degrees, right around body temperature, actually, because that's when yeasts and bacteria are most happy and they thrive, is right around body temperature. I know it's kind of disgusting, but you can do it, like when I do it, I set it on top of my stove where the pilot light is, because it's nice and warm up there, and that's perfect. Or if you have an oven that has a pilot, you can stick it in the oven. Or Elton Brown, who I love, he uses a heating pad. He sets his yogurt on a heating pad, and that works really well. So you do that. You let it incubate for about 7 hours, and voila, it's yogurt. That's how you make it. After 7 hours, you want to put it in the fridge, because after that, you want to keep it cold so it doesn't keep fermenting. And the longer it stays in the fridge, the thicker it's going to get and the tangier it's going to get. And if you want to make it even thicker, like Greek yogurt, you can put it in a coffee filter and set it in a strainer over some water, and it'll strain. It'll drain out, and it'll get thicker and thicker. And then you'll have like drained yogurt, which is sort of like yogurt cheese, or like faye, like the Greek yogurt. So that's how you do it yourself. And remember never to stir it, because when you're making yogurt, what you're doing is you're creating this delicate gel. Those proteins are kind of swelling up and absorbing moisture and coagulating, and you're creating a gel, and you don't want to stir, because the stirring will actually break the gel. So be really careful. If you want to cook with it, though, heat will also break it. So in India, yogurt is eaten a lot, and it's also used as a marinade for meats and for poultry. So when they use it in marinades or they use it in sauces, they actually stir in a little bit of chickpea flour, and that will help to stabilize the mixture and it won't break. But because it's so acidic, it's a great marinade for meats and for poultry, especially like tandoori chicken, if you eat that. That gets marinated in yogurt and spices for a couple of days, and the yogurt, the lactic acid in the yogurt, goes to work on the proteins in the meat, and it really tenderizes them, and it also adds a lot of moisture. So when I'm hungry and I don't know what I want to eat, and my brain and my stomach are fighting it out over what I should eat, it's like the battle between good and evil, when they're having another frenemy fight, I just sit back and let them fight it out. Maybe watch an old episode of Gilligan's Island while my psychologist parents ignore me, and suck down a big bowl of fermented dairy deliciousness that we call yogurt. So that's all the time we have for tonight. Thanks for listening to Why We Cook. We'll see you next week on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.